Blog Talk Radio.
We welcome the night.
Welcome to Horror Not Oasis, a radio show where we discuss all the latest movies and news from the world of horror. Joining me tonight, as always, is my co-host, Ian. Ian, are you there?
I am here.
How are you doing this week?
I've been better, but been worse. So.
Yeah, can't complain. But we're here, and we got ourselves... Honestly, this is probably going to be a small show, because there's not really much to do... News-wise, there's no really big news topics. There's one, but not a lot to really get into like we normally do on the show. But there is one review we have planned, and after that, I think we'll just call it a show. But yeah, the one bit of news, I guess we can get into this real quick, is that Fede Alvarez, who, of course, you know, Don't Breathe, and he helped produce the Evil Dead reboot in 2013. He's going to be producing another installment or reboot, reimagining, whatever, of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Ian. So that we have that to look forward to, because we need another reboot of the series again after 2-3 years ago. You know, that one didn't do well. So we got to do it again. And, I mean, in a way, I'm interested because, again, of what he did for Evil Dead and because he directed that and Don't Breathe and all that. So I'm interested to see, but he's producing it. So, again, I'm not exactly sure because you can produce a lot of things and you can still get shitty results. So I don't know. I'm kind of optimistic. I don't really think we need another Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, but like we're gonna get another Saw movie next year. We're gonna get a freaking reimagining or remake of Wrong Turn, not a sequel. You know, there's already six. We're gonna get a remake of the original. We already got Grudge. We gotta remake the Grudge again, and that's next year. So we gotta get all these properties and throw them out there, try to make money. And you know, next year, I don't know, man, next year is going to be rough. I was going through a list of all the stuff possibly coming out next year, and some might not happen, like the Friday the 13th film, but then we have, you know, Halloween Kills, and then again The Grudge, and well, just all this other stuff. And again, not really anything too, you know, nothing really new. In a way, no, like, new big property. It's going to be another one of those years where it's just going to be probably like the first year we started to do the show, where it's just like Carrie remake and this and that and just a bunch of stuff. But what's your thoughts on the possibility of another installment of Texas Chainsaw Massacre? I mean, it's inevitable, but
Yeah, I mean, they're talking about rebooting everything, but I don't know. I think, you know, it might work depending, you know, on the direction that he goes with.
Well, he's producing
hopefully he
it,
doesn't
remember.
Do. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, this is like the 10th time it's been remade. I know, not literally, but, like, kind of feels like, you know, every couple of years you see a new one, so. But, no, it's, I think it's just pointless, honestly, just completely pointless right now. I mean, I get it, you know, they just did the whole Michael Myers brought that back, and it did okay, so now they're like, hey, maybe all of this will work. And I know that, if I'm not mistaken, I read something about a new Friday the 13th. I haven't really, so, you know, let's just bring them all back.
I don't know. I'm still unsure on that because of the whole lawsuit thing between that's going, it's crazy, that lawsuit, and it's the, what they're possibly going to happen. So, again, the whole Friday the 13th, just it's dead, honestly, in my opinion. There's nothing with that series happening ever for a while, and I don't expect anything. I mean, we got fan films. We can have fan films for the world's content, you know, like Never Hike Alone and the sequel, which is actually going to be set in the snow, which I'm looking forward to. So, yeah, there's just all these fan films. You know, that's the one thing we're – for Friday the 13th anyway. I mean, plenty of fan films out there. But for the series, I mean, that's where it's going to be, fan films. I mean, we're going to have Halloween, we're going to have Saw, we're going to have all the other stuff out there, series coming and doing sequels and this and that. But Friday the 13th, I think it's just going to be fan films from here on out.
Yeah, and it just feels so lazy. Like, you know, I get it. It, you know, it did really, really well, and now they're just riding on the that coattail, and it's like nobody really wants these remakes. Like, it's just lazy. It's really all it boils down to is that they have no ideas, and they're just trying to get some quick cash grabs and keep, you know, pass around the rights and to all of these movies. So they're just, I don't know, I just kind of want to go back to, like, good original movies. Like, we,
I mean, they're
did
out
get
there.
A couple years ago.
Yeah. You just got to look and look and look. I mean, again, we do the indie stuff hoping to find the gem. We do every now and then. And that's, again, no big other really big news, really. So I guess going on from that, I don't really have anything else to say. If it happens, it happens, and we'll see what other news might, because it has a writer now, because it's in, you know, pre-production stages. They don't even have a script yet. So it's just the idea that they're making another Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie not that long after it just had one. But again, it is what it is. Going on for our Indie Spotlight review, and this is a film that I found on eBay. I didn't, you know, just always do my searching, and apparently this film was made in 2017, but didn't get released until actually like a week or so ago. So it's technically brand new, even though it was shot a couple years back. And it's called Entrenchment, and this is Devin Parrish. She actually plays one of the lead characters in the movie, Lucy. She's the redhead in the film, and this is her freshman film. This is her first feature directorial debut, and it was produced by John Seymour and Scott Bainey. They're of Scared City Productions, and they run a haunted house every year called Scared City. And so they just teamed up, I guess, to make this feature. And they're actually going to do another. They already worked on another film. It's a trailer before this one. I forgot what the name of that one was. But this is the first one. This is Entrenchment. And this is a slasher film, which they actually got a pretty big name. Honestly, they got Tyler Mane as the central villain of the film. And, of course, if you don't know Tyler Mane, he played Michael Myers in the Rob Zombie Halloween films. And very interesting to see, you know, like, how they managed to pull Tyler Mane off just for this very, very low-budget indie film. But nonetheless, we'll get into that, and we'll get into, like, all the other details of the good and the bad of the film. So Entrenchment, it starts off with this family that you see is murdered. They're in this living room, and it's strewed about, everything's messed up, and they're all dead. And we have a girl who is escaping from the house. She's running from the house, and she keeps running, and then you hear a thud. And then we have her on this bed, and of course we're introduced to Tyler Mane's character, and he kills her, basically, in this sort of like upstairs, sort of attic area, but there's just like a dirty mattress and stuff on the walls. And then we're introduced to our central characters Lucy and Abby. And apparently there was this party again, Abby stayed over at Lucy's, and Abby has to get up and go to have her classes, her college classes, and she's still getting picked on because she's a lesbian, and they go around calling her dyke. And Lucy's like trying to give her, you know, support, like, why do you take that, stand up for yourself, you know, because Lucy's one of those that's already sort of considered a whore in a sense, but she like mans up. And, you know, like, takes it to the chin, in a sense. And Lucy's also a webcam model. Of course, you know, masturbating on camera. I'm assuming it's that way because they make it out to be that way.
Okay.
And, yeah. But she gets sent this link to this website while she's camming has a latitude and longitude coordinates to something, and it's called foxholes. And it's like the serial, you know, like, oh, I got this link, and it's apparently from a serial killer, and he sent me to this website, and there's you know, coordinates on here, and it's to something. And so they kind of shrug it off a little bit, and Lucy and Abby do, and that's when Abby goes to college and gets called names and everything. And then they basically find out that the girl from the beginning of the movie is missing, and the people from, you know, in the college want to do this vigil at this park, and so they all kind of congregate there. And we're introduced to Angela and Brian and Lewis. And Angela hates Abby, not Abby. Well, she kind of hates both of them, Abby and Lucy. And then Brian hates Lucy because of what she did to Angela, which we'll get into a little bit later. And just the whole thing. And they're at this vigil. Brian is there, and he brings a beer, and Lucy's all mad at him. Like, why would you bring a beer to a vigil? You know, you're supposed to be thing, and here you are drinking. And anyway, next thing you know, Lucy and Abby just walk, something hits them or makes a noise, and they see this envelope on a tree, and they pick it up, and a finger falls out, and they're all like, oh, it's a finger, you know, oh, it could be fake, it could be real, you know, it's a finger. And then Angela comes over, and then they start bringing up the whole website, and like they look it up and everything, like, okay, let's do that tomorrow. So tomorrow at 4:30, we'll meet back here, and we'll go to these coordinates in the middle of where, you know, wherever they might be. And so that's technically the beginning opening of the movie, without getting too much into spoilers just yet, because we might. So the movie, this, you know, this being Devin's first feature, there's a lot of problems. The audio is pretty bad, because a lot of the time, like when it first started, I didn't know. I mean, the names are on the back of the DVD case, right? So I knew the names, but when you're listening to it, I don't know if you got this in, but when I was listening to it, when they said Lucy, or when her friend came over and they got in the car and they were driving to the place because she wanted pizza and they didn't have pizza and she didn't want a sloppy Joe and she got a sloppy Joe, it sounded like she got called Libby or Lizzie. Lizzie. She got called Lizzie. And then I forgot what the other one, but
I couldn't
it sounded
hear
like,
it. Like, honestly,
yeah.
I got tired of turning the volume up and then turning the volume down, turn the volume up, turning the volume down. Like, even my wife, she was in the bed. She has to be up early in the morning. She got annoyed, I guess, and shut the door upstairs. So I was like, yeah, I'm probably just going to leave it down. Find a volume and just keep it there.
Yeah.
And, like,
and that's... Yeah, the audio is the probably the biggest problem this film has. And because, like, there's parts, and even when the Abby and Lucy are talking in the back of their apartment, and, like, it just cuts out. Like, they're talking, I guess they talk to where, like, it cuts out the whatever they were using, so it, like, just flattened out. And then they had to do a lot of ADR for certain scenes where they're walking, especially later on when they're walking in the woods, and it's... Levi and not Levi, but Lewis and Abby, and they're just walking, and it's just their backs, and it's just 80 yard, and there's a lot of that where it's like the camera's behind the backs, and it's just audio synced in underneath the footage, and just again like the camera just not picking up everything, so that's like the main critique. So there's a lot of issues there with the audio. The acting, again, it's fine. I mean, we don't really compare acting on here anymore, because it is what it is when it comes to indie films. So it's fine. Nothing really over the top or cheesy. It was pretty straightforward, because it was just the way that this film goes, because it sets itself up for a slasher film, and it does have some okay slashers, slasher moments, and a little bit of decent bloodshed, basically just like being poured on people, wounds and open wounds and stuff like that. So there's some good bloodshed, but the one thing that kind of throws this film for a loop is the gay lesbianism undertone. That is the main point of dialogue, or the script anyway, for this film, because it's constant, like, oh, she's a dyke, she's a lesbian, this character likes that character, and there's an underlining sexual tension between these two characters. Oh, I'm gay, I'm hiding it, you know. You got to understand that, you know, some of them are hard-headed. And they'll understand it if you come out, you know. So there's a lot of, homosexuality, just, you know, type of film, you know, in the structure of the story. And that's the general story progression. You don't really get too much of the Tyler main character. There's like a little bit of a backstory that's in a flashback that really doesn't give too much of why, even though it is a killer and you don't really need a reason, but it is kind of his whole part is just here and, you know, null and void in a sense. And it's because it is more or less, you know, not saying gay and lesbian stuff don't work in horror films, because there's been numerous films that's done this. I mean, even slashers, I think I brought it up before, Hellbent. It's like an early 2000 slasher, or mid, 2005, 2004, somewhere in there. And that was a pretty, that's a gay slasher movie. It's not too bad. Hide and Go Shriek is a gay slasher movie. That's a pretty damn good movie. It's not, it's been done, and it's been good,
yeah.
done good before. It just felt like this one is just, it felt like not really shoehorned in, but it's just, if you want to say forced, but it just, it didn't really feel
that's
like
my takeaway from it.
Yeah. You go ahead, Ian. You talk a little about it.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, when it comes to that, I was just like, just the language, it's like every 5 minutes it was brought up and it was like, yes, I understand this character. And I understand, I get the whole, the problems that are associated with that. And I just was like, it just felt kind of like they didn't really know what to say, so they just kept mentioning it. Just like, I was like, it was established in the beginning, in the opening. I was like, okay, this is fine. Even though the whole opening common, like the whole dialogue in the beginning was rough.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, it was kind of cringy because it just seemed like they were just making stuff up on the fly and they were just reacting to what was being said. That's just how it felt. Like it was just ad-libbed. And but I was just like, yeah, okay. I got bored after like the first 20, 30 times that it was brought up. And I was like, okay. It's established she's getting picked on. That's fine. But what does this have to do with the whole story? Because, toward the end, it was like, it just kept going, even when they were, not even together. They were all, separated
yeah.
out in the woods. And it just kept going. And I was like, is this what this whole movie's about? It's an hour long. An hour and, 10 minutes?
Yeah.
And more than half the movie was just the main, being brought up that the main character was gay. And I was like, I don't know, it was just kind of annoying. It started getting really old, really quick. And,
Yeah, and it just didn't really go anywhere except for, what technically kind of happened, I guess, at the end, but that doesn't really justify anything. But because again, that kind of shadows over the whole fucking slasher aspect of the movie, which is what you'd want.
Yeah.
And you barely get, and there's a lot, oh man, I gotta get to the editing choices as well. But it just shoehorns the whole slasher aspect because it's it's an interesting idea. I mean, I like the idea that there's a serial killer, or this killer in general, and he sees the girl that's on a webcam and sends her this site. Like, it has to be her for some reason. But then the whole, again, because you don't know unless she actually said it on the webcam. Most web girls aren't going to say where they pinpoint their location, because there's a little continuity errors in there as well, to where this serial killer is technically in the same town as Abby and Lucy. So he sends the coordinates to latitude and longitude somewhere, and there's his last victim, apparently, is in this foxhole. And they go there, and then they're starting to get stalked and attacked, and that kind of doesn't happen in a sense. Because it sounds like great, okay, so you go there and you find something, because he has shovels set up and dirt mounds, and they uncover something. And then they hear a noise, and then they split up. And that's what they do. You never see. And again, that goes into effect of Tyler Mayne as the slasher villain in this film, because I'm assuming they only had a certain day to shoot his scenes, because he was probably, wrapped up in another movie or he had a convention. So he only had probably a set amount of probably even one day, because I'm assuming, you know, the last scene in the movie was like the first scene because it was the brightest. So I'm assuming they did it as the way the sun was up. So the very earliest, you got the end, and then progressively until you get to all the outside scenes, and then you can shoot the rest in the house. So you don't have to worry about light. But yeah, it's just like his whole arc is kind of overshadowed, and you don't really get that much of a payoff. I mean, what he uses, you know, his entrenchment, you know, his trenchment tool or whatever, his shovel, it's cool looking. I like the way that it's, you know, he uses it, but you don't really see that much of it. There's no really big dismemberments or anything. It's just, you know, like cuts and, you know, open wounds and, you know, just blood pouring down someone's face. You know, nothing overly gory, because budget limitations, of course. But again, and that's the one thing where I guess they had to do the stuff that they did in the woods because, you know, like the noise. Oh, it's a noise. We got to run. We got to split up. You don't see anything because of the, you know, limited time that they have with Tyler. But the one thing is, like, I don't know if you – there's like, scenes that probably the wanted to shoot. I'm assuming this. I don't know for sure. But, like, there's scenes that, like, should have had an introduction scene or something, or what's the establishing shot. There's the scene where they get separated. So you have Abby and Lewis, and then Lucy and Brian, and then Angela's by herself. And so you have Abby and Lewis, and they're doing their own thing, and they're talking, you know, talking about the gay stuff, lesbian stuff, and all that. And then you have Lucy and Brian talking about Angela and the stuff that happened between her and Lucy and how Brian's mad at Lucy and everything. And then you just see Angela, you know, enter this house. Like, when did she find a house? So I'm assuming there should have been an establishing shot in between those scenes where she saw the house. You didn't have to show her go in the house. Just show her in front of a house and then go back to her entering the house, you know, doing stuff in the house and finding things. So there's like a lot of scenes where it felt like they're missing something. Like they didn't shoot it or didn't have the time to, and they just made do. Because that was one of, like, you know, when I was going back, like, why didn't they do an establishing shot there? It just did not make sense. That it's just like, oh, I'm in a house now. And again, they do a lot of stuff with her in the house where it's just like she's going through the house, she sees the drawings, because apparently he has a childlike mentality still, based off everything, because he's still painting, you know, drawing like a elementary school, a preschool child technically, because it was just really, you know,
yeah, crude stick figures.
Yeah, well, yeah, crude and everything, and so there's something there that you just don't get the full effect of his arc or his character. He's just, oh, here's this killer. And there's something there, but you don't get to go too much into his character, which is a shame because it's cool what he was doing. And then she, you know, again, she hears, she's up in the attic, she sees the blood on the mattress, and then she hears a noise, and she falls back onto the mattress. I'm like, why would you fall back into the mattress? I mean, it's for visual sake, I'm assuming. Like, oh, she's just covered in blood, and she's running down the stairs, and then she comes across the killer. You know, I'm assuming it's all like in the head. It was cool. You know, like this would be a cool scene to do. This would be a great scene to do. And it's just like, again, it kind of leads nowhere towards the end of the film. And then the very end just kind of leads off nowhere because, like, they're running, you know, everyone's starting to get, you know, killed and, you know, like, oh, here, this person's dead, that person's dead. Who cares about the dialogue we had for all of this leading up, because who cares? They're dead now. It doesn't go anywhere. And then we have our, you know, two main characters, and then it's just this random thing happens and, like, what? And then that doesn't go anywhere. And then it's like, okay, now this happens. And then we get the epilogue. Like, oh, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. Like, what? It's just, it's all, Ian, what's going on there? What's happening there towards the ending?
Honestly, I don't have any idea. Like, I started getting lost because I was like, I can't. And honestly, I was thinking about rewinding it because I, you know, I looked down because, like I said, I got a little bored, so I got a little sidetracked. And I look up, she's in a house, and I was like, when did that happen? I was like, maybe I wasn't paying attention enough, but I'm glad that I was. It was just not there. I was lost. And I just felt more and more lost as the movie progressed. I was like, okay, so there's all these random noises in the woods, and
it's like you've never been out into the woods before, you know? You're like, oh, it's a raccoon or it's a squirrel. I'm like, like, what's that? They run off.
And that, honestly, that scene when they were walking and there's that little pinhole camera thing to it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, is there going to be more to this? But, you know, like, it's just the walking and talking about their sexuality is getting on my nerves. It was really starting to irritate me. And I literally, like, you know, I don't know. It was one of the things that aggravated me the most about the movie was just like, you know, they just tried to make it centered around that one girl, even though it was supposed to be centered around the fact that these kids are getting murdered.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the Abby character, as you're referencing, it just, as it went on, she made it like herself like she was entitled. You know, like, why do I care? You know, it's just the way that she came off. Like, oh, I shouldn't have to deal with this shit. You know, like, it's not like everyone's, like, telling her, like, man up. And she's, like, all, you know, snotty bitch, in a sense. Especially, like, when she was, like, talking with Leva, Lewis. And it's just like, what? She just came off as, you know, entitled a little bit. I mean, I was like, okay, you know, like, these, actually, I'm starting to go more on their side. Like, you're really starting to become stuck up on this whole situation. Like, you're in college, you should get past this, you know?
I mean, you know, I get that, you know, I get it, because especially, you know, being like that, you know, I knew, but it's the same time, it's like, there wasn't a good character. There really was not a good character.
No.
And I didn't care for any of them. Like, I get it. They wanted us to feel sorry for her. And they wanted us to be on her side. Because all these people were just kept doing that. And I know that they were trying to make a social commentary.
Mm-hmm.
On it. But at the same time, like, is the killer trying to, like, it would have made more sense to go that route if that's what the killer was after. But no, he was just a random, like, the killer made no sense. Like, if you break it down, like, if he has a child mentality, then how did he build a website?
Yeah.
And knew where to find them? And, like, leave all these...
Yeah, use a phone.
Yeah, and leave notes. And it's just, like, it was kind of like they just put it together at the last minute. And I was sitting there thinking, I was like, okay, so...
And his outfit, his clothes is very backwoods. He has the overalls with the one undone button, the hat with, like, the leaf feather, the fox face on it, and he was just, like, very backwoods killer. And, you know, just kind of, like, they needed to go more into that and, more understanding of his character and the reasoning why instead of the one random flashback that comes out of nowhere after Angela finds the crude drawings on the wall, and then we get sort of something that resembles a backstory, but you're not exactly sure because you know, you're assuming that that's his father killing somebody. I'm not sure if it's just a random person or his mother, because the way that he did that, the audio was distorted and you couldn't make out hardly what the person was saying. So it kind of made it difficult to understand the whole backstory subplot because the distorted audio that they used for the voice.
No, like, that's... My biggest problem with it, you know, like, is the audio. Not so much the acting, but the dialogue and...
The camera work, too, because the camera work was all over the place, in my opinion, because,
parts
where, like, the people were, like, not even in focus or, like, out of frame from people giving other dialogue. You know, it's just, like, the camera's, like, above their heads and, like, not even, you know, it's just, the camera was all over the place for most of the part, and it was, like, floating around, and they're just, like, why, it doesn't need to be floating in this scene that's still, you know? They're all just standing there talking, and the killer's in the background, slowly walking towards the camera, and it's just like it's like a ghost, just like hoovering back and forth, like ooh, it was just weird. But I didn't mean to cut in there, Ian. It was just another observation
I
had.
I was going to say that too. You know, like the camera, the audio, the dialogue, and the unhashed out killer. Like,
yeah,
I mean. I understand budget, and I kudos on them for getting a big name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think this movie would have been good if they could have just at least hashed out the story more and hashed out the killer. And I get that they wanted to use a big name, and I'm glad, you know, I think it's neat that they got him. But if his schedule isn't going to work for your movie, you're going to have to, you know, maybe just let him be a cameo or something. Not like the main killer when they can't be a main killer. Because it's just, I think it would have worked more for that. And...
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if they're listening, you know, I don't want you all to think that we're
It's their feature, you know, it's their feature film.
It is.
So, I mean, it's like when we, you know, Michael Taylor Prick, you know, his first feature. You know, we pinpointed all the ups and downs, you know, the good and bad with it. And then he kept on adding and, you know, making, you know, bettering himself. And this, you know...
Yeah.
It's you take the criticism and you better yourself with it. And like I said, you know, it's low budget filmmaking. Yes, this is prime example of, you know, do it yourself stuff with everything that you have. Because again, the audio, the camera issues, you try to fix it with the ADR.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of problems. I mean, you have the big name in there with Tyler and his schedule probably conflicting with everything. So you have to make the best of it. And that's just the way that it goes with like these low-budget films.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like another one I always bring up, like the Legend of Haywood Hospital. It was supposed to be this big, you know, it's a low-budget regional movie made in Hayeswood, Kentucky, and it's supposed to be about these ghost hunters finding this book and doing all this stuff, and then half the actors quit, and they had to go a different route. So it's on the fly trying to figure things out. And so that's exactly, you know, I'm assuming, you know, it wasn't as bad as that, but I'm sure there's a lot of things thrown at, you know, while they were making this, but they had to do stuff on the fly, and, you know, they tried their best. And, you know, there's a lot of things still wrong with it, and you just put your best foot forward and just try to work on the lows and make a better, you know, more better film. I mean, the idea, like I said, we always say it, the idea is there. I mean, I like the idea of the killer and the website and the coordinates and finding it and then being stalked. I just wish that kind of happened, you know, being stalked instead of a random noise scaring people. Of, you know, just like wood noises. Like, that's nothing. And there's just, like, you know, a bunch of, you know, the editing, you know, there's a lot of missing stuff that probably should have been shot, that might have wasn't shot, establishing shots. And just like the characters were just, you know, as Ian said, they wanted you to get, you know, feel sympathy for this character and the way she was picked on. And they just made her seem all stuck up and entitled, and all the other characters had, like, their own thing that just, like, weren't good people in general. And, like, it just didn't really do anything. And then, again, of course, the ending, I don't want to get the ending because it just, everything that happens just leads to technically nothing, you know? You're just there, like, what's the point?
Yeah, and, you know, but you know, I think it really, like, I really did enjoy the concept of the movie,
mm-hmm.
you know, and even with the, you know, the social commentary, I thought the social commentary kind of worked up into a certain point, like, you know, and then it just started getting weird, like, oh, well, this girl is actually bisexual, and her boyfriend is mad, blah, blah, blah. And
yeah,
it's
like, oh,
and
you gave her mono.
Why is she doing all this?
Yeah.
I was like, if she is, you know, feels this way, then why is she hurting these two? Like, why is she, like, hurting them so bad? It isn't really, and then they're like, the other guy was like, oh, I thought it was good. Oh, now you told me it's wrong. I guess it's wrong. And it just was like, what is even going on right now?
Mm-hmm.
It's like these characters kept flip-flopping throughout the movie about what their stances are and, like, what they believe. It's just like, what? Who? Nothing really gets resolved. Everybody is still shitty. And
mm-hmm.
the ending was just kind of like a forced happy ending.
In a sense.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah, in a sense. It's just all over the place story-wise.
Yeah.
And nothing felt hashed out. It just, like I said earlier, you know, it felt like when they didn't have anything else to say, they just brought up her sexuality as a filler. And, you know, I like when the opening scene to this movie, I was like, ooh, okay, this is how we're going to start. Let's see where else this goes. And it doesn't really lead anywhere later, and I was kind of disappointed.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely had a good start. I was like, all right, this is something. I'm interested. You know, as you said, interested. And then it just kind of just meanders around for the rest of the hour.
Yeah. I think if they would have made it, you know, a short, even shorter, I think it would have been a little better.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it, you know, a good 30-minute, you know, you can still have the 40 minutes, you know, it would have worked out for what they were trying to do. You wouldn't have the long talks in the, you know, walks in the woods with everything. You'd still have the point and get everything across, and then you'd have, you know, your killer show up here and there, and it would make sense that he's only in it for a small amount of time, and it would work out evenly. But,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead and finish up what you're saying, Ian.
Oh, I was just saying, you know, exactly. Like, you could have just, it could have been a cut and dry film, and
yeah.
you wouldn't have had to worry about all those, you know, social issues.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the biggest problem that a lot of these indie makers seems to have a lot. You know, like the common problem is that when it could be a short, they want to turn it into a feature, but they don't have a story for a feature. So
yeah.
they just throw in random filler. That's
yeah.
not even
well,
needed.
And yeah.
Oh,
but going on that, everything you need, if you want to buy it, I put the link in the description of the video. It's on eBay. All Facebook links are in the description. So everything's there. So that's going to do it for our review of Entrenchment from Devin Paris and Scared City Productions. We thank you for listening to our review, and we will see you next time.